small step. It's just one step moving forward in this year that's going to start so many great processes. I want to ask you to turn in your Bibles to John chapter 5. We're starting a brand new sermon series, one that I'm calling This Can't Wait, because I know that I have a tendency to say, when this happens, when I arrive here, then I'll start. Once I get all the junk food out of the pantry, then I'll start my diet. Once it's a new month on the calendar, that's a good time to start a new exercise program. You'll notice there's a theme here. There's a time when this will be more convenient, or it's better to do this in the summer, or when the kids get out of the house, or when they've got them through college, that's when I'll start. And I don't want us to wait one more day, one more minute. And so the next 6-7 weeks, we're going to look at things that just cannot wait. And to do that, I want to tell you three stories. Three stories that sound too good to be true. They sound unbelievable. You're going to hear these and go, did that really happen? And I'm going to say, yes, it really did happen. The first one happened 6 years ago. If you remember, in 2005, ISIS was a big deal. They were just going through and pillaging and destroying whole cities, and it created this mass migration of people. It was the greatest movement of people, millions of people groups that moved from these countries to, they were displaced. They were what we call refugees. Do you remember this? And there was a big uproar about, what do we do about refugees? And there was one group of refugees that I never remember anybody talking about. And when I found this story, I thought, how did I not hear about this? This was 6 years ago. This should have made every headline in the world. But it was the story of Joseph and Michelle Assad. There they are. Good-looking couple. They both happen to be former intelligence officers. If you don't know what an intelligence officer, it means that they worked for the CIA. Ooh. And they heard about these people that were displaced, and they said, we need to do something for them. And it was a certain group of people in a city in Iraq, and there was especially 25 families, 159 refugees in all, 62 of them were children, and they all just happened to be Christians. You'll see some of their faces and pictures as they scroll up here. Joseph and Michelle found out that, like all of refugees, they were looking for a place to stay. But unlike most refugees, there was countries that just simply wouldn't take them. They wouldn't take them because of their belief in Christ. Joseph says this. He says, we are rescuing people that are at their most vulnerable. And Christians happen to be a part of this group that is most vulnerable. Muslims have other Muslim nations that they can turn to. They can go to other Arab countries. They can resettle there. Christians are having a much more difficult time resettling in some of these Arab countries. Michelle says, it's about giving these people a chance, like somebody took a chance on me, giving children hope, allowing people to leave and to live with dignity. Joseph contacted dozens, at least a dozen countries, and was turned down. It sounds like another story of refugees. I was going to tell this, Jim, at our candlelight service, and I just ran out of time, but it reminded me of Joseph and Mary going door to door looking for a place to stay. Joseph says, we knocked on a lot of doors, and they finally found the country of Slovakia. How many of you can find Slovakia on a map? Don't Google it. How many of you in your mind think you know where it is? Well, they decided to take, guess what, all 149 of those kids, families, old people. Joseph says, I tell people, don't be afraid of refugees. There's a way to show compassion and to do it intelligently. We can show this compassion, so I think there's a lot more that we could do. Isn't that a wonderful story? I remember hearing that. I would have volunteered. They could have stayed at my house, at least three or four of them, right? I would have been happy to have them. There's another story you're going to find unbelievable. In fact, people found this story completely unbelievable throughout centuries. It's right there in John chapter 5. It's a story of a healing. It says in verse 1, sometime later, Jesus went to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals, and now there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool, which is in Aramaic, it's called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five colored colonnades. Now, it's interesting that John goes into so much detail Do you ever know somebody who gives like more detail than they should when they're telling you, now you're going to go down here and you're going to see, you're going to go down to this place and then you're going to see a bridge, and now that barn's not there anymore, but it used to be painted red. And when it was painted red, you're like, I don't need to know all of that, but here's John and he's giving us way too many details for this story. It'll be important here in a minute. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie. The blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? It's not written here, but I think it's assumed. Well, duh. Yeah, Jesus, of course. Sir, the invalid said, I have no one to help me to get into the pool when the water is stirred, and while I'm trying to get in, somebody else goes ahead of me. And then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. And once the man was cured, he picked up his mat and he walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. Dun, dun, dun. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat, because that's how they talked. But he replied, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. And so they asked him, who is this fellow who so told you to pick it up and walk? And the man who was healed said, had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and he said to him, see, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. Well, what do you do with a story like that? It's a bit unbelievable, isn't it? It's strange in a lot of ways. I've got a lot of questions. We're going to ask a lot of questions of this text this morning. But the one question that you might ask is, did that really happen? Is that like real, real? Is that true, true? Well, skeptics said that for years. They said, well, we've been to the places that this is described, and there's no pool. And so this is made up. This is just something that John used as a literary device to tell a deeper story about who Jesus is. But there's no pool. That never happened until 1888. There was an excavation that took place near a church near Jerusalem, and they found this pool exactly as Apostle John described it, just where he said it would be, the colonnades, the whole thing. And so we know the pool existed. Now the question is, why did people gather around this pool? What was it about this pool that made them think that it would cure them? Was it a natural mineral? Was it a hot spring? Was there something? What was it? Seems an odd thing to do. Well, the urban legend was that an angel periodically would come down and swipe its wing over the water, and the water would be stirred, and if you got in there, the first one in gets a blessing, the others just get wet. I thought it was like some kind of really strange a reality show, like game show, like the Hunger Games, the healing games. Who wants to be a millionaire? Who wants to get a miracle? You know, who wants to get a healing? And so people traveled from all over just to sit, just to get a chance, just maybe if I can get. And then like other people are cutting in line, which doesn't surprise you if you've ever driven in Texas where a sign says lane ends, merge right, and then nobody merges. And the good people do, the people that love the Lord, they get over in the right-hand lane. And then you got to watch all these people, and then they say, no, we're not kidding, it really does end, is you have 1,000 feet, and people still, it's 500 feet. And then you get up to those people who are trying to cut in, and you want to say things about them. You don't, you think it, but you don't. Who cuts in front of a guy who's been lame for 38 years? The same people that don't merge. I'll tell you that. So the question I had of this text is, what's that like? What's it like to live with that kind of a handicap? And then the more I thought about it, I guess the deeper I thought about it, I said, you know, it's not just the physical handicaps, is it? There's some spiritual handicaps going on here that are way, way worse. What if you were spiritually blind instead of physically blind? What if you walked around this world not being able to see all the good things that God does? Texting with a dear friend just the other day, we were talking about this year. It's been hard, hard year. And I said, I know there were blessings in 2020, They're hard to see. And she texted back, yes, God was very discreet. My good. Kind of like that healing. Jesus says, oh, pick up your mat and walk. And then he just blends into the cedary. He just steps back. No fanfare. No, you know, send your money to this place. He just stays so discreet. Maybe your handicap is that you're spiritually lame. You can't walk, you can't move, you can't get going. I talk about this as feeling like I got my ox in a ditch. I just can't get the momentum. I can't overcome that inertia, that sense of what's holding me down, that's keeping me down. I can't break through and get moving. And I keep thinking, well, maybe next week, maybe next month, maybe next summer, maybe when the kids go to college. You ever been hopelessly stuck in the same stagnant waters of doubt and apathy? Then you've been spiritually lame. Maybe you've been spiritually hurt, abused, beaten up. Abuse takes on so many different forms: physical, sexual, emotional, mental. Some of you have been cheated on, lied about. You've been hurt because your heart's broken. You can't seem to find happy anymore. You know you used to have it, but you're spiritually paralyzed. You just can't get past all of that hurt. Some of us are spiritually mute. You know what you should say. I love Trey telling us this morning, hey, maybe instead of saying the word COVID, we say Jesus. Well, I'd be talking about Jesus a whole lot more than I did in 2020 if I just replaced those words for each other. You find yourself around other people that might use filthy language or tell dirty jokes, and it's on the tip of your tongue to say, hey, can we cut that out? And you swallow your tongue. Those people that are sitting around the pool of Bethesda in that day, they weren't only physically handicapped. Many of them, I would say all of them, were just like you and me, spiritually handicapped, struggling, waiting for a healing. And then comes this question of Jesus. If I had questions for the text, Jesus has questions for me. Do you want to get well? That's a dumb question, Jesus. Why would you ask somebody who's been an invalid for 38 years? Do they want to? Of course they want to get well. It's what struck me about Jesus' question. Jesus never forces himself, does he? Jesus operates under the same principle of his Father. It's this thing called free will. Where Jesus offers, he asks, he invites, but he never forces. Revelation 3:20, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I come in and eat with that person and they with me. Jesus, I put it this way this morning. Jesus is very polite. Did you ever used to have to answer the phone at your house? Used to have one phone. It was above our washing machine. It had a cord so long it reached to the neighbor's house. Remember that? It'd get all tangled up. You'd spend an hour untangling it. Kids, you used to get a phone call and not know who it was. Can you imagine the anxiety of picking up a phone, not knowing who it was? Normally it was important. You had to pay for long distance. You got a busy signal. You don't know any of these things. I could be talking about threshing wheat and you wouldn't know any different. But when we answered the phone, we had to say, what? Brooks residence, Jeffrey speaking. And they would say, can I talk to your mother? Or, you know, I'd say, no, she's out of the country. And that was because they were trying to sell her something. That's just what we did. Jesus calls my mother. My mother is going to say, you only tell bad stories about me, Jeffrey. That's not true. We were trained to be very polite on the phone. So I'm going to give her credit for this one. We still facetiously answer that way when we're at her house. Brooks residence, Jeffrey speaking. Jesus calls. He would text now because only a maniac calls somebody to talk to him person to person. Oh, who would do that? He would text today. He would send an invitation. He would knock on our door. But he always allows us the choice. He always allows us to make the decision. Do you want to get well? Jesus had a long history of healing people. In Luke chapter 5, verse 15, crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sickness. In Matthew 15, 30, great crowds came to him, bringing the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and laid them at his feet, and he healed them. In John chapter 6, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. The healing is what draws people to Jesus. But Jesus says there's something far greater than being able to physically see or physically walk or physically talk. Jesus says there's a choice you've got to make. It's that question that he asks us today. Do you want to get well? Do you want to start moving in the direction that I'm leading? Do you want to go to the place where I'm going? But it's your choice. It's like Paul in front of King Agrippa there in Acts 26. Paul is preaching his heart out, and he turns to Agrippa. King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you do. And then Agrippa looks at Paul and says, what, do you think that in such a short time that you can persuade me to be a Christian? And Paul says what? Short time or long, I pray to God that not only you, but all who are listening to me today may become what I am except for these chains. Paul makes the same offer that Jesus makes. Jesus offers, he offers that a change can be made. He offers us a chance to change. He has the cure for what ails you. He is the cure. And so what's God telling you to do? Jesus does something in this healing that he does in a lot of other healings. He says, go and do this. Go and show yourselves. Put this mud in your eyes. He gives him something to do. And that's not unlike many different miraculous things that happen in Scripture. Now, I want to be careful with this because it sounds like if we do certain things, then God has to act. We are not controlling God through our obedience. I want you to hear that. God is transforming us through our obedience. That by doing the things that God has told us to do, he offers a transformation, a metamorphosis. God says to Moses, take off your sandals, take off your shoes, for the place that you're standing is holy. And then Moses becomes the Messiah to his people. Those same people walk out of slavery, walk out of Egypt, walk through the wilderness, and they get to the Jordan River, and it's at flood stage. In fact, two times flood stage, and there's just no way of getting across. And God says, if you'll step foot into the river, I'll part it. And sure enough, he doesn't part it before they... It's when the bottom of their feet gets wet that God does something miraculous. Elisha says to Naaman, go dip seven times in the Jordan. And Naaman goes, ew, the Jordan? There's better rivers over here. And it's not the fifth time, it's not the sixth time, it's the seventh time that he goes down and comes up that he's cured. Jesus says to Peter, come to me on the water. And Peter obeyed, and the miraculous happened. He tells the blind man, go wash the mud off. And he obeyed, and he could see. Take up your mat and walk. And when they do, God acts. What is God telling you to do? You see, there's no shortage of messages from God. It's not like we're wandering around going, well, if God would just tell me, then I'd go do it. But I just haven't heard anything from him. He hadn't told me anything lately, so I don't know what to do. The instructions here, the how-to, the next steps are just all over Scripture. Choose one and follow it today. John chapter 10, verse 27 says, my sheep listen to my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And so, would you do this year? Would you take one step? Follow him where he's asking you to go. Be careful, because he asks you really difficult things. He says things like, you might want to put a filter on your internet to keep you from going to those places you shouldn't go. You might need to pick up the phone and call somebody and start the conversation with, I need you to forgive me. He might be telling you to tear up your credit cards and quit spending your wealth on frivolous things. He might, like Dave Ramsey, tell you to sell your car. I don't know. He might tell you that. He might tell you to walk away from an addiction that you think has trapped you, and that for years now, decades now, you've tried to overcome it and you can't do it. Maybe he's telling you to get up early in the morning and finally spend time with him. Whatever it is that God's telling you to do, I would ask you to take that step. I love preaching. I love preaching because I never know what sermons are going to do. And this morning in first service, two things happened. Jay Dunlap got up afterwards and he goes, "Jeff, not only did you ever think about those other people that could have helped that guy into the pool, maybe that's who we need to be." And I'm like, "Yeah, way better sermon, Jay, than what I had written. Thanks a lot." But another conversation, and Chet, I want to ask you to come up here. Chet and I were talking about this idea of, I said, Jesus says to the invalid, he says, "Be careful, stop sinning, or something worse could happen to you." And my response to that was, like, if you've been an invalid for 38 years, you would look at Jesus and go, "No, what worse could happen to me? Because there's nothing worse than this." And Chet, you had a different take, a different perspective.
I said that I turned 41 this week. That's not the part that I was going to tell, but 41 years in a body with no arms, I know other things are worse. It's the people around me, not necessarily family, but strangers, who look at me and say, "What could be worse?" I know what's worse. And so when the man is asked, "Do you want to be healed?" I think part of that is, have you given up? Is this all there is? And I've said many times, I don't know that I would want healing in a physical sense, because starting over with another body part just seems maddening to me.
What would you do with arms?
I know. Hands, arms and hands confuse the daylights out of me. Sleep. I just.
And gloves?
That's just weirdness. I think that it's easy for us to look at him and say, "Well, what could be worse?" And I look at this and this is my life. What could be worse would be being away from God.
That was my next question. You did it so beautifully. Because I've heard you say it before, you know, if I had a chance at a miracle, my miracle wouldn't be arms. What would it be?
Don't say the lottery.
I think my miracle would be being free from a world of sin.
Oh. I'll take that.
I think miracle would be having what is in heaven here right now with no encumbrances. Just because, yeah, that's so much better than arms or legs or being able to see. And I think that most people with disabilities would tell you the same thing. I'm not looking for physical healing. If we're believers, we're looking for spiritual healing because it means so much more.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Chet and I have great conversations. I tell him every now and then that I forget that he doesn't have arms. And we were in the foyer one day, and Wii School was letting out, and these preschoolers. And preschoolers just, you know, they're going to stare. They don't have any filters. And these kids were looking, and I thought there was something going on behind Chet. Like, I was like, what could they be looking at? Like, what could be? And I was like, oh, yeah, they're looking at Chet. That, and I waved to him on the highway. That's a whole other story. Think about that as you drive home today. He's just not going to respond. I want to close. There's four good stories this morning. I want to close with this one. It's a new hero of mine, a guy by the name of Dr. Omar Atik. He ran a clinic, a cancer clinic, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, for almost 30 years. He started in 1991, saw thousands of patients and got them through chemotherapy and radiation and healed so many. Wonderful story of healing. Well, Dr. Atik was closing his practice. You can see, there's this beautiful family. Aren't they gorgeous? And then you could see some of his patients as well. But he was closing his practice. And as he was closing the books, he noticed that there was a lot of outstanding debt. Are you ready for this? $650,000 worth of medical debt. And he sat down with his wife and he said, you know, we could turn this over to a collection agency. We could hold on to that. There's all these things that we could do. And he said, what if we just canceled it? And so a few days before Christmas, all of his patients got a notice that whatever your outstanding bill was, it's forgiven. Why is he one of my heroes? Because that's probably the best way I can describe what it feels like to hear from Jesus. Go pick up your mat and walk. In some ways, he says, go dip in the water and you'll be clean. And then he says, and go and feed somebody who's hungry, and then go and tell somebody who doesn't know about me, and then go and he always gives instructions. And the question is, this year in 2021, am I going to take the first small step? So many of us are struggling with handicaps, but our greatest need, our deepest need, has already been canceled, paid in full. And all we have to do is respond to that invitation. He stands and he knocks. He calls politely and he invites us in to a world free from sin debt, free from the destruction that comes from all of those things we mentioned this morning. I guess the only question left to ask is this: do you want to be well? If you do, then respond to him this morning. Be baptized into Christ. Go and tell, go and live a life that tells the world, shows the world what it is to be loved by Jesus. Let's stand and sing a song together.